Helen, you told me last time that you came to California with your husband and your youngest daughter in
1942. In July 1942.
And you came to
Long Beach,
to your uncle.
Mm-hmm, to my Uncle Glenn.
Did you stay with him?
Maybe a couple, 3 nights or so, and then we found a little place to stay until we could rent an apartment. Mm-hmm. And we finally rented a little apartment.
How was it, how long was it before you went to work at Douglas?
Well, we got here in July of 42. And I guess it was sometime in probably the latter part of July or fourth part of August, we went down and to Douglas, you know, to see if we could get a job. And of course, they put you on right away because it was cost plus in those days. And of course, my husband went to work without any training because what they had him doing, he didn't have. But I was with a group of women and we went in training for all these things you had to do, you know.
How did you decide to choose Douglas as the place to work?
Because my uncle worked there, and there was no problem to get on there in the wartime, you know. And I think we had probably a month's training, and we were paid while we were training. And then we went out to the plant and went to work out at the plant.
I'd like to go back and ask you about the first day that you went down to apply for the job, what that process was like. Did you apply at the plant itself?
You know, that's been so long ago I can't recall, but I think we did. I think they had a play up there, and then of course the groups that they put on there, the ones that applied, those that applied at the same time were the ones that went in for this training and that. Then there'd be another group later on come in. But, oh, there must have been, I would say, 40, 50 of us that went in training. And some trained for one thing, some trained for another, you know. And my education was limited. I didn't try to go in for any office work. A lot of them went in for office work. But I went into the industrial part of it, you know.
Were you interviewed?
Yes. They would just, you had to have a birth certificate, you know, and to prove you was an American citizen, that kind of, you know, and they would, I imagine, investigate you in those days because, well, I guess they were afraid of foreign intervention or something, but anyhow, they were very strict about your birth certificate and all that stuff, you know. And the interview was very, very limited. They didn't do a whole lot outside of you present your birth certificates and where you came from and what you'd done before and that like that, you know.
Did more than one person interview you? Or do you remember?
Not that I recall. I think we just had this I'll take that back. It seems to me there was a man and a woman. The woman was copying stuff and the man was doing like he was asking questions. I think that was the way it was. Because they pushed you through pretty fast, you know. They didn't take a lot of time.
In that interview, did they give you any information about what the job would be like, how much money you would be making?
Yes,
kinds of things?
I go back to that. I can't exactly recall how much we were paid. But I know that ever so often we'd get a automatic raise. And it runs in my mind when it first started out, it was around $45 a week. But I'm not, that's just a rough guess. I don't know why one didn't keep a record of it, more than you did, but I didn't.
After the interview, what happened? Did you have any kind of testing or any kind of medical examination?
Oh, yes. We all had a medical examination. They had a medical doctor right there in the building, and we had a medical examination. And I don't remember the doctor's names either. They had the medical examiner was right there in the building. When you got through with the main, the starting of it, you know, then you go get a medical, you know, and then when you pass that or your physical, then you go and we didn't train in the plant. We trained someplace else for quite a while. I mean, you know, I had classes, in other words. A whole group of people in classes, and somebody be talking and get you familiar with what the process was going to be. But they didn't. We didn't get right down to basic working for about probably 3 weeks or more. Then we went out to plant, and then we do some training out there to get the feel of the thing. Mm-hmm. Then you had to buy your own tools. Whatever you were going to do. Of course, I was going to work on the wing section. I was going to be a riveter or a bucker, as they call it. One would buck the rivet and one would drive the rivets. And the one that drove the rivets had to have the drill and a whole set of different size drills, because you never knew what size, you knew what size because they're marked, what size rivets you're going to use. I didn't do a whole lot of bucking because I wasn't that strong. It takes somebody a little stronger they furnished you with a rivet gun. We didn't have to buy that. You were furnished with a rivet gun. But you had to have your own drill, your own hammer, your own flashlights, your own small things, you know.
Where did you buy those?
Right there at the shop. You go buy tools anyhow. There was a huge room. You go in there and check out what you wanted, you know, and you could pay for it or they could take it out of your wages, whichever. And I don't remember which way I did it now. But I know I had to have. Of course, a drill today, drills in those days weren't that expensive. I don't suppose a drill was more than $12, $15. Today they're a lot more than that.
Did you have any choice about what job you would have? Did they just assign you, or?
They assigned you according to what they felt you could do, you know. And I was assigned to this wing section on a
three-quarter.
B-17? That was built before we were there. Boy, that place is dirty. I bought that, but that plane had already been built. They built a lot of planes to carry troops, you know. Was that
C-47?
C-47, it might have been. My memory after 30 years is a little bit fuzzy on a lot of that. And I suppose if I knew where to look, I might even have a record of something, but I would have no idea. But I know it was on the wing section where I started working, and I couldn't tell you how many of us there were worked on that wing animal. But there was usually two of you paired together, and you stayed with what you were doing. And then they'd have an inspector come along and inspect your work.
Let's go back a minute. And when you went for your interview and were thinking about getting a job and that, what were your expectations about what the job would be like? What did you think about it?
I really had no idea. I had never seen anything like that. You know, I had no idea what it would be like. But it was really, I don't know how you would say it was exciting, you know, and very to see how they did these things and to think, you know, and that they do all these things and sing and fly in the air.
What was your training school like?
Well, there wasn't a whole lot. They just mostly that we had to take notes of things they were telling us, you know, and rules. Mostly, that's about all. They had quite a few sessions of just talking and telling you what to expect to do and all these things, you know. And there were rules, things you could do and things you couldn't do.
Did you actually do riveting and drilling and things like that there?
Yeah, I did. You have to drill the holes first, you know, and then you drive the rivets. And some, as I say, there's different size rivets. As you progress up on the thing, you get bigger rivets. Sometimes you have to have smaller rivets.
Do you remember how many people were in your class with you?
I have a judge around 40, between 40 and 50. And we had a lead man. And that was more or less a disaster.
This was in school?
No, this was in actual work. And we had this lead man. He lived. He was a young fellow, and I was our lead man. I don't know about other ones, but this lead man we had, I would judge him to have been around 20, 21, about the same age as my son, who was overseas in the war. That was my primary reason to go to work, is because I had a son in the service. And this young fella, his father lived in Santa Ana, and they were quite well-to-do people, and his father bought him off, you know. He got him a job in the defense plant, so he was deferred. Boy, was he useless. Time and again, as a lead man, you'd ask him, he didn't know anything. He didn't know as much as we girls did. And time and again, I've gone around the side of the plane where the wing section of, and he'd be sitting there playing mumbly peg. And we women working like our heads off. We were all of us pretty perturbed, though. There was nothing to do about it. His father got him off by getting him a job in the defense plant. And,
Did you ever complain about it?
Oh, yeah. That didn't do any good. The more you complain, you learn not to complain. You learn not to complain but there were times that we would tell our foreman, we'd like to have a lead man who at least would tell us, you know, would lead us. But he didn't. We girls had to do our own. But now I don't know how others were, because I had no involvement with any other except my section. But I know that was very disturbing. It goes to show the politics, you know. Mm-hmm. Money talks. No, I don't know. I worked there 2.5 years, but I developed. I don't know what they'd call it, something from the muscle here anyhow, and I could use this arm. And this thing got this big around, stood out here, you know. And I went to the doctor about it, there in the building. And I suppose that was about a year, it began developing. I suppose the riveting and it was too much for the muscle part here. I don't know what it was, but I had that removed about 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. It got to be very annoying.
And like a growth?
Yes, and it bothered, you know. But oh, my elbow swelled terrible. Yeah. So when I went down there, and the doctor, he didn't put me on. Take me off the work or anything, you know. He just said that it was caused from the lifting or whatever it was doing. And but I think he wrapped it with an ace bandage. But I got so I just couldn't handle a drill. I couldn't handle any of this stuff. So I asked for a different job. Well, I really wanted to quit, but they won't let you quit. That's cost plus. They won't let you quit. So when I asked for a different job, they wanted to know what qualifications I had for something different. I wanted to be an inspector, because I knew the job from A to Z. I really knew the job. But they had a policy. The inspectors were beautiful young girls. You hardly ever saw somebody that was older that would be just as qualified, or maybe more qualified. I know we had this one young girl, and of course the boys, they whistled at her, you know, she was around. That was quite a deal for that, you know. And I wasn't built like they were, you know. But they didn't have an opening for an inspector, so when I went in that one morning, well, they said they had a different job for me. Well, they handed me a broom, and I'm supposed to sweep the floor. Well, I said, if I can't use this arm to do the work on that, I can't sweep with this arm. No way could I sweep with this arm. So I still wanted to quit. Well, they wouldn't let me, so I went home, and I stayed home. And we didn't have telephones in those days. But my uncle still worked out there. So they would get a hold of him to get a hold of me to tell me to come in if they wanted to talk to me. And I said, well, at the time, I had a chip on my shoulder, I really, because I wasn't going to sweep a floor. And that's all I had. He would tell me that they wanted me to come in. I said, well, they know where I am. They know my address. They want to see me. They can come see me. But I'm not coming in. Well, I don't know how long that went on. Finally, my uncle said one day, and he told them out there, he wasn't carrying any more messages back and forth. Well, then they wanted him to deliver this one more for me to come in. He thought they had something I could do. Well, I went in with my arm all like this and bandaged up, you know. And I talked with this one man. I don't know how long I must have talked with him. And he would not come up with me to have a job of inspection. He'd give me something else. Well, whatever it was, I couldn't do it. I was with my arm. It wasn't helping me any, you know. So I went home again. And I didn't go back. And finally, I think they sent somebody at the house that time. So I went in and I saw the didn't see the same man. I saw a different one. And when I walked in, of course, I had my Irish up. And he said, sit down, Mrs. Steeder. And I said, thank you, I'll stand. And he said, oh, please take this chip off your shoulder and let's talk reasonable. Well, he talked nice, so I sat down and talked. But I said, I'm going to tell you before you start. You're not offering me any other job. I know what I can do. And if you can't come up with a job of inspection, let's don't even talk about it. So then he wanted to know what I thought I could in the inspection line. He asked me this and he asked me that. Well, I give him a straight answer every time, and he'll come up with, he finally figured out I could do it. So they gave me a job of inspection. And I was on the job of inspection for a year and a half till I fell by no fault of my own. When it comes to noon hour, if the inspector is inspecting, now I had also, besides the, now in the inspection, I inspected other things other than the wings. And part of the inspection was the shell that goes around the engine. And they had it sitting vertical. And of course, it's quite tall. I don't know how tall the thing was. And when you inspect the lower part of it, then they put a platform in the middle. And I'm inspecting on the platform in the middle when the bell rang for lunch. So you just lay your things down right where you are. And once that piece is turned over for inspection, the lead man or nobody has a right to touch it. But when I came back from lunch and went up in there, and I had my little inspection mirror and what, and I stepped up and I put my arms up, and just as I put my arms up, the platform gave way, and I went down about 10, 12 feet and landed on my feet, and I just got down there and killed me. Well, the lead man come around, and he said, oh, I thought I put that down right. I thought I had it adjusted right. He admitted right off, so, and then later he said he didn't, but then that was his first thing, was he thought he put it back. Come to find out what they did, one of the workmen said he remembered there was something they didn't do, and they, before I got to it, it should be fixed. So that's why they took the platform out lunch hour, and when they put it back, they didn't put it back solid, see. Well, I was pretty ill for quite a while, and the doctor said I couldn't go. Oh, I started flowing, and you know, and I've injured somehow. And then, of course, they wanted me to go back to work. Well, I wasn't able to go back to work. Well, Then they weren't going to pay me. They weren't going to pay me my wages or something. I don't remember. So I got a lawyer. That's dumb. Lawyers have, Douglas has lawyers that allow flies trying to swallow an elephant. So I didn't get anywhere with them. However, the judge did allow me, I remember, I think I got $600 or $700, didn't amount to much, though. And my health was ruined. Because eventually I still laid the injury to my cancer operation. I had a terrible cancer operation in 51, and that was in 46. So I still lay it to that. But I never went back to work. I never did go back to work because the war was over. You know, was it 45 or 46 when it was over anyhow. I guess it was 45. And so then there was a lot of people laid off, you know. And of course I was among the very first to get laid off. I could have gone back and gone to work later on, but I didn't do it. But I never was well after that either.
What happened when you fell? I mean, did people from the front office come down and try and help you, or did
everybody around me. Of course, they had to call whoever to call, and I couldn't walk. I just went down. That's an awful jar to let us go that far down. I'm not very heavy, but you're my weight. But they took me down to the infirmary, is that what they call it? And I was hurting pretty bad, and then they took me home, and then my husband or somebody had to go back after the car. Or I might have, now that particular time, I might have been, we had, like they have today when you want people to ride, what do they have?
Carpools.
We had carpools. And I would drive 1 week, and another lady would drive 1 week. I think there was three of us. We'd change off, you know, every other week. And we'd pick up probably four others, you know, we'd have a load in the car anyway. And I might have been in the carpool that week, I don't recall. However, I do know they took me home. And I was in bed for days, I hurt awful bad.
Did they ever try to settle with you to get them, get you not to sue them? Or?
No. No. They just said they had their own lawyer, and somebody told me I was very foolish to try to fight them because the little lawyer I could get, could afford, couldn't compare to the kind of lawyers that Douglas would have, you know. Mm-hmm. So it was a lost cause. The only thing I did come out with when that was so, for the finally, the judge said, well, he felt I was due some compensation. So that's how I think I got around $700. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that I'd like to ask you some specific questions about the first day that you went to work there. First of all, you've been in training for 3 weeks
at least, uh-huh.
How did you feel about your ability to go into the plant and handle a job like that?
I felt that I had as much ability as the next one for what I chose to do, whatever I choose to do, I do it with my very best I can, to, you know, ability, and I'm not the type of person who will cheat on my work. I put in my full time, and that sort of thing.
And we were talking about your feelings about your ability to do the job that first day.
Yeah, well, it's like I say, we were most all housewives that was doing this, and I felt that I just had as much ability as the next one. Mm-hmm. I hadn't ever worked too much out. I worked before I was married as a secretary. And then later on years, like I told you about, I worked at the Apple House every fall. But that was the extent of my working away from home. But I always felt that if you give the time the best you have, you know, well, you can do as well as the next one can. In fact, sometimes I think most of us housewives did better than a lot of the men were there, you know, because they drew off. You'd be surprised how often they'd take off and go outside and smoke cigarettes. You were allowed, I forget now, every hour you were allowed 10 minutes, I think. Because you just nearly go, all that noise in there, you go out of your mind nearly. But I never went, and of course if you needed to go to the restroom or something, you could take time for that. They weren't too awfully strict as to what you could, you know, if you had to leave the plant for a little bit, but it was amazing how many people take advantage of that, but I never took advantage of it. But as far as my ability to do what I was doing, I could do, in fact, you didn't bring my badge and stuff back.
Not yet.
But there's little things I won, you know, things of my ability or whatever it was I did, you know. Because aside from the lead man, you had a foreman, you know, and they know pretty much what if they're a good foreman, and we had a very nice one. Only thing I can remember about him, his name was Bill, and he used to have what's these headaches again?
Migraine
headaches. Oh, poor man, he just his eyes would pop out of his